The Drive is brought to you on demand by Assignar Construction Operations Software. Visit keepbuilding.com for a free demonstration and see how much your business can save.
Leading off with the big story of the day, Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan presents The Drive with Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac.
Anthony hit by Greg, goes to Anthony, still out of throw to the net, loose puck, they score! It popped out for Nichushkin, and it's time! Landeskog, as he's falling, made the pass. That shot, they score! Sam Girard got it through! Colorado has their first lead. Here's Manson. Bennington's reset. Manson scores! Josh Manson wins game one!
Tyler, it was exciting, no doubt. An overtime winner from Josh Manson last night.
Best trade in Avs history?
Yep, certainly. Yep. I mean, talk about significant. That was significant.
Yes, sir.
It paid off last night for sure. The Avs get goals from kind of three unlikely sources. I mean, Nichushkin, not necessarily as unlikely. He's on the first line, but not the main guy on the first line. Sam Girard, and then Josh Manson gets the game winner. I don't know where you were when you were watching it. So we do post-game show after every Avs game. Myself, Rachel V. Hill, Will Peterson. So overtime games are a little bit hectic.
Right? Oh, yeah.
Because they can end at any second.
Yeah.
So we're all connected. We got our earpieces in. We're ready to go.
You're staying up late, too.
You're staying up late. That's right. That's right. And you don't know if you're going to go on the air in a minute.
Right.
Or an hour and 30 minutes.
Yep.
You have no idea. So I'm watching it with my kids. I'm sort of running around celebrating. And at the same time, like, oh, crap, I got to go get in my chair and talk about this because the clock's starting to run. Like, we start as soon as the game ends. So it was a ton of fun. It was exciting. It was also, though, Tyler, based on the way that game went, and I'm a fatalist, where I sit there and I just kept thinking, we're going to be talking tomorrow about how they outplayed them and they dominated them and they should have won it, and now they're down 1-0. I was just relieved that they got the win, kept control of the series, and escaped last night with a 3-2 victory.
Oh, yeah. I think everybody had a little bit of fear. I mean, if it wasn't fear, you were certainly nervous when it came down to the wire there. You know, Ryan O'Reilly opens up the series with the first goal, and it was relatively, how early was that? Like, the first 5 minutes, wasn't it?
It was first. It was the first half of the first period.
Yeah, relatively early, right? So, and of course, it's like, of course it had to be Ryan O'Reilly. Now, I actually don't think that O'Reilly means anything to the Colorado Avalanche. Like, I don't think he means anything to the players. I don't think that, but it means something to the fan base.
Right. I mean, a handful of guys were even here when he was here. It's been 7 years.
Right, right. But it just felt like, ruh-roh, that's not the way it's supposed to start out.
Right.
And then, you know, Bennington, I saw some people say that they didn't even think that he played that great. Okay, I don't know. You stopped 53 out of 54 shots. Or not 53 out of 54.
51 out of 54.
Yeah, right. 51 out of 54. That's that seems like a hell of a night to me. Right?
I thought he was good. I thought the Avs made it a little easier
on
him.
Well, they had some gimmies that they absolutely missed.
Yeah.
Right?
And then he had some get past him that he got fortunate on that they hit post.
I mean, that diving full-arm extension glove save, that was just we just gave that one right back to him, unfortunately.
Yeah, he had a few, though, that were highlight reels for sure. Thanks to our listeners and Highlands Ranch for making 104.3 The Fan part of your day. I watched Game 7 of Dallas and Calgary. And Ottinger for Dallas kept them in the game because he was all over the place. Like, that was a legitimate, like, he had 50 saves and probably half of them were like, oh, my God, that should have been a goal. I mean, it was that kind of game. I don't think Bennington was quite that good last night. But, look, when you have 50-plus saves,
when we got towards the end of the second, it was just an absolute offensive onslaught for the Colorado Avalanche. I mean, they kept the puck on their half of the ice like the entire period, including almost the entirety of the game, it felt like. And I put out a tweet that I was like, normally I wouldn't do this because I don't want to be the jinxy cat guy. But I was like, this is insane. This is an offensive onslaught. The floodgates are about to open. There's no way. Like, you can't keep putting that many shots on goal. You hit the post or the pipe five different times. And it's like, okay, at some point those are going to go in, but it just never happened. The onslaught, the floodgates, they never opened up. And then by the time you get to overtime, you certainly know it's do or die. Anything could happen at this point in time. And you had the what you thought was going to be a great penalty kill at the end of the third there. Turns out to be a little bit of a sloppy transition. End up giving a goal, what should have been a great penalty kill. That was the first moment that I looked at it. I'm not a smart enough hockey analyst to be able to tell you what exactly went wrong there. It felt like it was a little bit of bad luck, but you had two guys chasing the puck. It was bad transition. That was the only moment of the game that I felt like, okay, the Avalanche, they deserved to give up a goal there. The rest of the game, it felt like the Avalanche, they deserved to be up 5-1.
Yeah. We talked about it a lot yesterday. When I was on with Zach, my pick was 6-2 as the final score. And I feel like it should have been a 6-2 game. Like, I really do. The Avs had so many opportunities to score. Binnington made some great saves. They hit the post 5 times. They missed just some wide open, and whiffed on it. I think it was Eric Johnson who had one that was a golden opportunity.
I'm trying to blank. Who had the one where Binnington had the diving glove hand save? It was an absolute layup, but just kind of choked on it.
Yeah.
I mean, that was a layup. Just put a little bit of loft on the puck at all, and that thing's going in.
They had so many of those, it's hard to keep track of them.
Man, and then in overtime, do you remember in overtime, we had 2 1-on-1 breakaways.
Yep.
Right out the gate, and it was like, okay, here we go. The first one, you missed the net entirely. Second one, it wasn't quite as wide open of a breakaway. But when we didn't hit those, then I'm like, now I'm really getting panicked.
Well, and there was the play earlier in the game where the St. Louis defenseman just misplayed the puck, and Helm wound up with the breakaway, and he couldn't put it away. It was just like, oh my gosh, is this just not going to happen? In overtime, the Avs outshot him 13-0.
Right.
And I really do think the biggest benefit going into overtime, because it would be really easy if you're the Avs to look at it and say, I can't believe we have to go out and play overtime. I mean, looking at the stat sheet, we've dominated this game. We had so many opportunities. If you're sitting in that room, you're saying, I missed this one, and hey, those guys missed. You would kind of maybe start to feel sorry for yourself. But the fact that they were coming out and they had basically half the power play left, I think was a good way to jumpstart it. Of like, let's just go finish this thing in 30 seconds. They didn't get it done in the power play, but it sort of got the ball rolling.
I feel like when you get to the end of regulation and you've got a power play, they should just extend regulation. Finish off the power play.
Yeah.
Right? Like, why do you have to wait until overtime in order to play? I just feel like, see what happens in the power play. Just stupid little.
It should be like soccer, like extended time.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
Okay. We got an extra 42 seconds here.
Let's just finish it off. Let's see what happens, because unfortunately it takes away a lot of the momentum that you've got going into that power play. Big picture though, James, I would say you couldn't have asked for anything more. You dominated. You absolutely went out there, did what you were supposed to do. You had 54 shots on goal. You had 13 in the overtime. You really didn't get challenged all too much on your defensive end. Although Kemper did have a handful of really good saves.
He didn't
get challenged like Binnington did, but he made a handful of really good saves. And now you get to walk away from that game and be like, okay, number one, we should have won 5-1. We dominated. We survived their best, right? And can Binnington really play like that all the way through? A lot of people say, yes, I know. He's won a cup. I get it. He did it as a rookie. He's gone all the way. I would imagine if you keep shots on net like that throughout the series, you're going to see some games that are 5-1.
Yeah, I'm with you. He continued to play as he played in his 3 starts in the series with Minnesota, where he came in and won the last 3 and helped them advance. And he continued it in game 1. But will that roll into game 2 and beyond? I have a hard time believing that. They play tomorrow night, 7:30 TNT game again. That's here. Then it's in St. Louis Saturday, 6 o'clock. So it's the evening game on Saturday. Again on TNT, game 4, Monday night, 7:30 in St. Louis. D-Mac will be traveling for us again, just as he did in Nashville. He'll be taking in the sights in St. Louis and covering everything that's going on out there. So be sure to follow him on social media, denverfan.com, the website. He'll be posting stuff and putting stuff up. So we will be all over it, wall to wall. As you look at it now, Tyler, with them escaping, well, first of all, what was your pick going in? How many? I said they'd win in 5.
So I said 5 as well. That was a little bit of the lazy man's take, right? Because what you're saying is you think they're going to dominate. You're not quite confident enough to go with the sweep.
Put it out there.
So you give them 1 win in there. I did take the under last night, and a lot of people said I was crazy on that. I took the under because I just felt like the time off, you've got 2 hot goaltenders. I thought there was going to be a little bit of rustiness from both sides. So I did nail that on the under last night. But I feel like after that, I'm really nervous about game 2, because if if the Blues do find a way to sneak one out tomorrow night on Colorado's own ice, if they find a way to get back to St. Louis 1-1, knowing that they could have easily won the first game, that changes a lot with the mojo.
It does. And you go out there and it's like, uh-oh, that's a tough place to play. The Avs historically have struggled in St. Louis. So it's just like, oh, man, they're going to have a home ice advantage. The Avs didn't have to deal with that in Nashville, right? By the time it got out there and the Avs were up 2-0, the Nashville fans knew what was going on, right? Game three, it was the late-arriving crowd because I think the vice president was in town. It made it tough. So by the time people got there, the Avs were ahead. Game four, it was like, well, we know we're not winning four straight against this team. So it had kind of taken the juice out of the fans.
How about when Shen was in the penalty box?
That was fantastic.
And smacking the camera.
One of my favorite moments of the night.
That was one of the more epic sports meltdowns. Like you think of baseball guys when they take the bat to the cooler and they just start smashing stuff down there in the dugout, right?
It was great. I love those kind of moments.
I do too.
It's, you know, because I can relate to them, right, of just being so frustrated and feel like the injustice of the call. Because he got called for high sticking. And his stick never came above his waist.
Yeah.
It was a little bit of a tough call that went the Avs' way.
But it does show you a little bit about where their mindset is at. And maybe it's just an individual player. But, you know, when you get in the box and you got a meltdown like that, the reason you got that meltdown is because you feel like you've given it your all and it's just not working, right? You don't do that if you've got confidence that you're going to win the game. You do that because you feel like you've lost the game.
Well, you feel like the call lost to the game.
Yeah, that's right. Right? That's right.
Because it's a 2-2 game. You've worked your butt off to get in that position. And look, they watch all the games against the Predators. They know as soon as the Avs go on the power play, last night notwithstanding, it's basically a goal. He went into the box thinking, we just lost because of that goal. We're going to lose 3-2. That ended up being the case. They didn't technically score on the power play, but as we said, they kind of got the ball rolling by being on it in overtime.
What'd you think about the holding call?
I thought it was a little bit weak. The one in the corner, was that on Taves?
Yeah. So, I mean, he was holding him. I mean, you got your stick wrapped around his body. But because he's up against the glass like that, it just feels like, are you really going to call holding at that point? I loved what the refs had done throughout the game. They didn't get overly involved. That actually terrified me because the Blues were not having a lot of penalties throughout the game. The Avalanche dominate when they get on the PKs. They didn't do it last night, but normally they dominate. And then you get towards the end of the game, and that felt like a really ticky-tack call to me. When you're up against the glass like that, I mean, your body's what's really holding him against the glass more than anything else.
Yeah. It gave us another chance, though, to interact or to watch a guy that's kind of turning into a bit of a villain here in Colorado, and that's Don Koharski.
Yeah.
The rules analyst for TNT, which probably is a nice guy, but it was
terrible at his job, though.
Terrible. Terrible, because he defended both of those calls like they were just no-brainers, and there was no other way the referees could have gone on it. It's like, those were the definition of coin flip calls.
Oh, yeah.
And
honestly, especially the one on Shen more than anything else. I actually thought the one on the Avs, like, you did have your arm wrapped around him. You had the stick. It was definitely holding him. Felt ticky-tack, but I could see that one getting called. The high stick, though, man, if that happened to us, I would have been on fire.
We would have been ticked. And it was just funny, in the intermission, the former players on the panel, you could tell they were like, you don't call that at that point in the game, right? Like, you swallow your whistle. It's got to be egregious to call a penalty, put somebody in the box for 2 minutes, and give a power play in a 2-2 game in the final 2 minutes of the period of the third period.
Get your damn act together.
And Don Koharski, man, he was out there just defending it to the bitter end. So he has turned into quite
sounded
villain.
Like a fool. He did. Like he didn't even sound confident in his own words.
Well, and he was the one that came out in the series against the Predators and was saying, oh, yeah, that goal definitely is going to stand. And then it got overturned, and he could not have been more wrong. Like, he is. And that must be a tougher job than we think, because in the NFL, like, Mike Pereira is probably wrong 60% of the time.
Right.
Mike Carey was wrong so often. They just got rid of him. Like, we can't even have you do this. And he was a great official.
Yep.
But he was terrible as the kind of replay analyst guy. Don Koharski has turned into that. We also got a chance, Tyler, last night to hear the new tradition for the Avs, which is, if they're winning big in the third period, they play Blink 182, All the Small Things. If it's a tight game, they don't, which I kind of like. I kind of like that they play their victory song early, which is a kind of a power move, kind of a baller move. And if they win in a tight game, then they play it after the game. There was some controversy of whether or not they played it last night. Blink 182, all the small things they did after the game, we confirmed it. But it got me thinking, traditions, right? It was the Blues 3 years ago. They played Gloria by Laura Branigan every time they won. That kind of became the anthem. They were playing it at bars all across town. I'm sure every radio station in town was playing it to death. It was like a flashback to 1982 all of a sudden.
Yep.
I think there's only one great tradition at the moment in Colorado sports.
Oh, wow. I got to think about that.
I think there's only one.
Wow. Like, I can't even think of, like, a real tradition in Colorado. Like, okay, so Broncos, they've got Thunderstruck. That's fun. They actually played No Effects at one point during the game, usually. That kind of has got a little bit of all the small things vibe going on. Gosh, what traditions do we have?
There's one that's it's arguably the best tradition in college football.
Hold on. Well, are you talking about Ralphie or are you talking?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's obviously the best tradition, like, in all of sports.
The running of Ralphie is a phenomenal tradition.
Yeah.
You know, they've tapered it off from what it used to be. It's not as full of a run. And I used to love when they would run and they'd go, like, right at the Nebraska players who were standing out. Like, that
Kansas
was fantastic.
Kansas State one time. So most of the time, now they don't let the opponents out onto the field Ralphie is running. Kansas State went out there one time and Ralphie just trampled on through them. So Buffs got a new Ralphie, okay? Ralphie does not have a new name just yet. She's about to get named here, I think, in the next couple weeks. She's a young Buff out there running around. She's a little bit wild.
Wait a minute, it's not going to be Ralphie 6 or whatever?
No. Yes, but they've all got real names also.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yes.
Wasn't there a new Ralphie last year?
She was
little.
Yes.
But still, it's the great tradition. They take him on the road to big games. You know, they would go to bowl games, and he was there at the Orange Bowl both times when they were playing for the national championship.
When I was playing, we brought Ralphie to Georgia. We went and played a road game at Georgia. They drove Ralphie across the country, and that was incredible to be able to have Ralphie lead us out in Georgia. We almost won that state game.
I was going to say, that was a closer game than anybody thought it would be, like a touchdown game.
Bernard Jackson at QB.
Yeah. Bernard Jackson. Georgia came in here.
All right, so do we have any traditions that there should be? Like, is there anything that...
Well, and we were talking about it in the office earlier, and Scrappy Will Peterson mentioned in... complete at
there
the Broncos games,
yep.
Which I'm in the minority on this. I think it's lame. I think it's silly.
That's not lame.
It's been going on so long. It's a tradition. It's fine.
That is not lame.
To me, it's in the same category as fruitcake. I get it. It's a tradition, but you should just nip it.
Well, first off, I think just about every stadium in the country does that. Same tradition.
So it's not,
I would say it's not unique, but I do like it. I mean, that's a good vibe, man. I mean, when they put out looks like it's about to be a touchdown pass, somehow Chris Harris jumps up there, swats that thing down, you get the incomplete. I like that one.
So that's on the list, 303-713-1043, the Ramos.com law text line. Send us in if you've got any that we're missing. Trying to think, like, what do the Nuggets do? It used to be Rocky would go out and shoot the half-court shots over his head.
Right.
Now, there's some things going on with Rocky. I may be breaking news here.
I feel like I am caught off guard. What are you talking about?
I'm not even sure I'm supposed to be saying this, but now that
it's
gone
too
this
little
far,
too late at this point,
like, it's
pal.
Not the same Rocky.
Like, literally, it's not?
Right. It's not the same guy. Like, there's a reason why they didn't make
a
lot of the
that.
Shots this year.
Wow, I was unaware that
so
there
they're
was
transitioning,
a new Rocky.
You know, the new Ralphie up in Boulder. So does that change your tradition if it's not the same
Rocky?
Yeah,
a little bit. Rocky was arguably the best mascot in all of sports. I mean, if you're talking, like, the athleticism, all the stuff that he was able to do, that dude was a wicked athlete. Whoever was behind that thing, he was a wicked
athlete.
For sure.
But it's a different person now. You know,
so you're saying he's new person's not a good athlete? Is what
well,
you're saying?
Not as good. Honestly, a little taller.
Okay.
And I think that makes that more difficult. You know, it's hard to be acrobatic. You don't see a lot of 6 foot tall gymnasts.
Okay.
It just kind of the way it goes. So that one is a little different. I like, and I here again. I'm in a.
Oh, the fountains at Coors Field. Well, how about that one?
That's not bad.
No, that's awesome. No, unfortunately, the Rockies suck, so most of the time you hit a home run and you're down by 12 runs.
No,
fountains,
but you know,
go off. But that one's cool.
That's a good one, and if you think back to when they were good and they had those big moments, and it was a home run, and, you know, that kind of led it, like Nolan Arenado's home run on Father's Day, and the fountain's going off. Like, okay, kind of gives you chills just talking about it. So that goes on there. I think Dinger standing behind home plate, spinning his head in the ninth inning, that's got to be on there. That's a great tradition.
Ooh, I didn't know that that was one.
Oh,
I mean, I know that he does it. I guess I didn't realize that was like set up. That's the ninth every single game.
Every time they got the lead, he's down there distracting.
Okay.
I think that's a great
one. See, this Blink 182 one, this has been like new to me. I haven't been to a lot of Avs games here recently.
Well, nobody gets to watch them, so you weren't aware of it.
Nobody got to watch them. I wasn't sure that it was going on. That thing felt like it just popped up out of nowhere, like we were the Red Sox with, oh my gosh, help me out here, the Red Sox song.
Sweet Caroline.
Sweet Caroline, thank you.
Yeah.
It felt like we had that going on, and I love it, but I did not know that it was tied to when the game is like out of control.
Yeah,
that's a dangerous precedent.
It is.
Because who calls that? Who gets to decide when they're going to play the Blink 182 song?
And it's inevitably going to bite them at some point.
You're up 2-1 with 2 minutes left and you play it?
I think it has to be 3-1. I think it's a 3-1 minimum.
Okay.
Or two goal lead minimum.
All right.
So, because last night, if they'd have got up 3-1 at one point, then they were going to play it. So you got to be up two goals. But crazy things happen, right? And over the course of 41 home games every single year, at some point, they're going to blow a two goal lead. And then it's going to be like, uh-oh, do we keep with this tradition? I'm actually friends with the guy who started Jump Around at Wisconsin games.
Okay.
That's a phenomenal tradition.
You know what? I'm calling BS on that.
No,
You're friends with the guy that started that tradition.
Yes.
As if there was a singular guy that started that. Like, he just made a decision, we're going to do Jump Around, and got the entire stadium to be on board with it.
Correct. He was a member of the football team. And he came up with the idea, got the student body to do it the following week.
I don't believe that.
Okay.
I think that he probably saw them do it one time, and he's like, oh, that's fun. Now I'm going to try to emphasize it. I don't buy that.
His grandfather was also the original Marlboro man.
Okay.
Right.
All
right.
Stop it.
Yeah.
I mean, so he's either has, you know, some great stories that are true or is a great BSer. But I'm going with that they're great stories that are
okay,
true.
Okay, you know what? The Texans are helping out. We got more traditions than we've thought of. How about the skydivers into Mile High Stadium? That's pretty bad.
Cool.
That's pretty awesome.
The fact that they can avoid the cables that are up there for the SkyCam,
dude, those
is
guys
pretty amazing.
I mean, those guys come in hot.
Yeah, they do.
They come in flying.
That's a cool one. I don't know that it's unique to Denver, but it's cool. I like it when I'm there at the game and that happens. So
yeah,
sure.
It's awesome.
I was at a game at Mile High Stadium when they missed the stadium and landed on I-25.
Oh, no way.
Yeah. It was a windy day.
Okay.
And they
land on I-25.
They blew a little too far to the east and landed on
I-25. There's probably not a lot of ideal spots to land outside of the stadium.
Yeah.
I'm going to say I-25 is the least ideal spot to land.
Right. That was back.
Everything worked out all right?
Yeah, they were fine.
Okay.
That was back if you'd have just, you know, gone a little bit further east, it was just fields.
Right.
There was plenty of places to land. They didn't do the parachuters for a while after that.
Yeah.
But they brought it back. That's cool. I don't know that it's unique to Colorado. It's cool, though.
I mean, another great one. I say it sucks to be a CSU Ram. I say it sucks to be. I'm just saying.
I was just going to say, we're not getting a lot of nominations for great traditions up in Fort Collins.
No, well, they got the cannon. They do. They got the cannon.
But
so many teams have got the cannon.
I mean, their biggest tradition
is... You get to run behind a little sheep? That's fun.
That is cool. Their biggest tradition is dressing up like empty seats. That's their biggest one up in Fort Collins. All right, keep them coming. 303-713-1043. Traditions in Denver sports, either ones that we're missing that are going on right now, ones that have been in the past, or ones that, hey, we're all for seeing some new ones come. I got an idea. Two ideas for Avalanche traditions.
All right.
I'll save those for later, and I'll present them. They both weren't mine, but I'm gonna pitch them like they're mine. If you like them, I'll stay with that. If not, I'll tell you who to blame for it. All right, Russell Wilson bought a house in Cherry Hills for $25 million. He may have overpaid though. When you see the house that a former Bronco put on the market, we'll talk about that and do the water cooler coming up next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.
It's time to take a trip to the water cooler.
Is this good for the company?
We need to talk about your TPS reports.
Did you see the memo about this?
Well, we find it's always better to fire people on a Friday.
If you could just go ahead and make sure you do that from now on, that would be great.
Here's Tyler and D-Mac.
What would you say you do here?
We're putting the house on the market.
Where are we moving? Is the house haunted?
Nancy and I are retiring and sailing around the world on my boat.
Well, what about us?
I've got a belly full of white dog crap in me. And now you lay this on me?
We could do a whole show of just Step Brothers clips, and I'd be fine with that.
Hey, sign me up, buddy. Do we just become best friends?
Yep. There is real estate news. Von Miller has put his home on the market, $4.125 million.
Oh,
now that's a lot of money. 17,000 square feet, nine bedroom, five or four full baths, 11 partials, and then a 1,400 square foot closet. That was one of the highlights. But 4.125 mil, that's significantly less than the $25 million Russell Wilson and Sierra dropped
for their
new pad. Did Russell Wilson overpay? Like, what's the takeaway from this?
Just a little bit. Oh, Club 58, no more.
That's right.
You know, I didn't go over to Club 58 all too often, but I was fortunate to get a couple invites post-game. There are some memories made at that house. It's a great setup. It's a great house. It's an incredible basement. I think he did a huge renovation. Like, when he bought it, it wasn't that big.
Okay.
So he did a huge renovation on it, added on to it. And, you know, I think it's interesting. I mean, the Russell Wilson deal is obviously just funny. He spent $25 million on a house that's probably same square footage. I don't know. Whatever the square footage is. Interesting, though, a little bit that Vaughn's not going to keep any roots in Denver. I wondered if he would. I guess he doesn't have any real reason to. I mean, it's sentimental. He's got a lot of memories here. He spent a lot of time here. But, you know, home's back in Texas. I guess it makes sense that you move on, but I did wonder if Von Miller would make roots here in Colorado.
Yeah, it does tell you that when he's done playing at some point and he can live anywhere he wants to.
Yeah, right, he's going to Texas.
He's going back to Texas. This won't be home for Von Miller and his family at that point.
Go check out the photos are online everywhere, so you can see the house. Anybody that hasn't seen it's a really cool house. It's got an epic basement. It's got an epic bar down there.
It's got a basketball court.
It's got which was kind of weird, though. The basketball court, like, he's got, I don't know how much property he had, but the basketball court is like three football fields away from the house.
So it's an outdoor court.
Yeah, it's an outdoor court.
Can you shoot a corner three?
Yes, it's a full court. So it's got two. Oh, wow. It's got two hoops. Tennis court. Yeah, sport court. Uh-huh. All that stuff.
All right.
Yeah.
So if you got $4 million lying around, I'm assuming it's somewhere down south, right?
I'll say Parker area.
Okay.
The taxes are a little bit different than that Cherry Hills tax.
Yeah. I'm no real estate expert, but after hearing what Russell Wilson paid, it seems like a deal.
Yeah, right.
So
right,
if
right.
you've got that kind of money floating around, maybe take a look at it. All right, what do we got next?
I've been cut already.
All right.
Already?
That was harsh. Philip Lindsay, the news came out yesterday that he signed a deal, kind of a prove-it deal, one-year deal with the Colts. That was good news for him. It was bad news for another local running back, though, Max Borgie, who's from Arvada.
Yeah.
Had to get cut in order to make roster space for Philip Lindsay. So in comes one Colorado high school product, out goes another.
So I actually put this story in the water cooler this morning because we talked about Philip getting signed yesterday, but I didn't connect the dots that he'd be competing for a roster spot with Max Borgie. I actually coached against Max in high school, went to Pomona, an insane athlete. I honestly thought Max would have I thought he might be a late round draft pick. I'm shocked that the Colts are moving on without even really giving him a shot at it. He went to Washington State.
Okay.
He had a good career. He plays a Christian McCaffrey type of role where he's a slot guy. He's a running back. He does a little bit of it all. But after I put that story on there, they waived Max Borgi this morning. So Philip takes over. Max Borgi is out, although it certainly does not guarantee Philip Lindsay a roster spot. And, you know, he's in a room with the best running back in the NFL. So
yeah.
Philip's got, he's still got a road ahead of himself here. In order to kind of, I don't know if redeem is the right word, but to continue his NFL career.
Yeah, you know, I would think he'd have a shot there, though, because, look, Jonathan Taylor's going to get the vast majority of the touches.
Yeah.
So your backup would need to be, I would think, kind of a change of pace guy.
Yeah.
Philip Lindsay seems to fit that role pretty well, so I think he's got a shot to make it there.
The only thing that is unique about Philip, and not to get too bogged down on this story, I thought we needed a change of pace back here in Denver. Melvin and Javonte, they're the exact same running backs, right? Yeah. The thing about Philip is it feels like he should be an outside runner. He's so fast. You should be able to give him those toss sweeps, get him outside. As small as he is, he's actually a better inside A-gap runner than he is an outside guy, for whatever that's worth.
So we'll see. Good news for Philip Lindsay, bad news for Max Borgi. All right, what do we got next?
The thing is, I am a Red Sox fan.
Yeah?
No, I'm like a big, big Red Sox fan.
I know. I mean, I've been to your apartment, seen the Red Sox dish towels and glasses and
oh, it's Jimmy Fallon
paper.
Drew Barrymore?
It's like you live in a gift shop.
Beaver pitch?
Yes, that's what it is.
Okay.
That's what it is.
All right. So I don't know if you saw this, Tyler.
I'm
but
a sucker for Drew Barrymore rom-com.
That's your go-to?
Yeah.
I'm more Kate Beckinsale.
Oh, okay.
Like a couple hours having to watch Kate Beckinsale and Serendipity?
Not too tough, is it?
Yeah. Sign me up. That's a great movie. All right, so a guy at the Red Sox game, they got blown out yesterday 13-4 by the Astros, but he's sitting up on top of the Green Monster. He doesn't catch one home run ball. He catches two. Now, the odds of that, you know, if you were in a stadium that was empty, if you were in an A's game, maybe, right? You just got to run through the empty stands and find the ball. To do it at a Red Sox game, it's a packed house, is pretty incredible. Have you ever caught a foul ball or a home run ball? I have not.
I haven't been to a ridiculous amount of baseball games, but I've been to a fair amount of baseball games. I've never caught one. This year, I brought the family. We were staying down on the third base line. My wife's like, should we bring the gloves? We're like, no, I don't need to bring the gloves, whatever. You know, what are the odds, right?
Yeah.
But I told the kids as soon as we sat down, like, hey, be ready in case the foul ball comes, right? In the first inning, we got a foul ball that I thought that was my shot, man. But it's kind of terrifying when that thing is coming at you, knowing that you've got your kids right next to you. Like, you better catch this thing. It was like 5 feet out of my reach, but I thought I was going to get my first one this year. You ever gotten one?
I have not. And you know, this is not a popular opinion in 2022. But if I catch one, I'm taking it home.
Yeah. Forget that. Throwing it back. Right.
Yeah. I'm not throwing it back. And here's the other thing.
We're talking about traditions.
I'm not giving it to the kid that's sitting like eight rows behind me.
You are just a jerk.
No. That kid's
you
got...
You are a jerk. James, that is a rule.
No,
if there is
it's
a
not.
Kid within a 5 or 10 foot radius of you that is fighting for that ball, you got to give it to the kid.
That is so 2022. When I was eight, you had to go get your own ball. Hey, maybe some adult will get it and give you a freebie. Go get your own ball, A. And B, you got 40 more years than I do to get one, kid.
You got a slight point. I am anti-participation trophy.
Right.
Yeah.
Hustle.
Slight point. Yeah.
Back in the day, you had to hustle to get the ball. You had to fight and scrap and claw with, you know, grown men that were drunk in the stands. Like, that's how it worked. I would keep the ball. All right. The Avs got the win last night in overtime. They take a 1-0 series lead over the Blues. We'll find out what all the latest is with the Avs with Mike Chambers coming up next.
It's The Drive with Tyler Palumbis and D-Mac on Denver Sports Station 104.3 The Fan.
All right, let's head out to the Johnson Auto Plaza hotline, bring in Mike Chambers from the Denver Post. Mike, the Avs escaped last night. 3-2 win in overtime, a game that really should have been a blowout. Do you attribute the fact that it wasn't to Jordan Binnington standing on his head or the Avs having a little rust after an 8-day layoff?
Well, first off, boys, thanks for having me on.
Always.
I appreciate it. I think the Avs use the word escaped, but I think the Blues escaped a butt-kicking.
Me too, Mike. Avs, I'm with you.
I think the Avs played to their identity. They played their game. I think they really played well. They beat up that team, and it could have been a 7-1 game easily.
Hey, Mike, this small thing in the big picture, they survived it. But, you know, at the end of the game, you got what feels like it's about to be a great penalty kill. You've got the line change. It ends up turning into a goal for the Blues. What happened there? What should have happened? What went wrong?
Yeah, Sam Girard made the zone exit, but he didn't get it deep enough. His backhander just made it to the St. Louis blue line, and then their D, Falk, recognized that the Avs were on a full change, and the Avs didn't have anybody on that weak side offensive blue line, on their blue line. And so that's typically a play that a lot of teams use if they recognize that it's a wholesale line change. And the Avs just misplayed it. If nothing else, all four guys can't change at the same time. Someone has to cover that weak side blue line. And that didn't happen, and that obviously hurt them, because the four fresh guys came on, and they were scrambling, and certainly they couldn't get into position, and Kyrou made them pay.
Mike, that play, the number of offsides that they had last night, I thought those were a couple of things, though. Rust is maybe not the right term, but just sort of a team that it was a little bit out of sync. Is that fair, or is it just, hey, you could see that, you know, they could have played the night before and you'd see things like that?
James is convinced that they're out of sync, Mike. He's just convinced that they were rusty.
I'm worrying, Mike.
He's convinced.
Well, I mean, this is a team that had that attempted 106 shots, and they got 54 on net, and the Blues blocked 34 shots. It might have been 27, I forget. But it reminded me of Game 2 against Nashville, which ended in overtime as well. And in that game, the Avs attempted 103 shots, and Nashville blocked about as many as last night. So it was kind of a duplicate game. In both games, the Avs deserved to win big, but they only did in overtime because of some bad luck and some good goaltending. But, you know, I think Binnington was good for sure, but, you know, the Avs hit five posts or iron, either a crossbar or the post, five times. That's quite a bit. It just seems, and they missed the net a whole bunch. They missed it 25 times last night. So, yeah, I do think that there was some rust. I think their shooting was off target. They missed the net, like I said, too many times. But I think in game two moving forward, I think they're going to be better.
All right, do you consider the five shots that hit the post, do you consider that bad luck, or were those missed opportunities?
Both. You know, if you get it that close to the net and you're that close from scoring, you know, I think it's a little of both, but I certainly don't think the Avs are going to hit clang five shots off iron in game two, because that's just, again, that's unlucky and it's just odd.
Mike, I'm a bit of a worrier by nature, so I look at last night and think, uh-oh, this may be a tighter series than maybe a lot of people thought going in. Do you see it that way, or is it, hey, that was the best shot the Blues had? Everything that could go wrong did go wrong for the Avs, and they still won. How do you kind of feel heading into game two?
I think the Avs feel a lot like they did against Nashville that whole series. I mean, after that game two against Nashville, the overtime one here in Denver, they go out and they shell Nashville 7-3. I think that they're so confident that they can see that happening next game. I think that they don't want to change anything they're doing. I think that they want to have the same game plan, same lines, same lineup throughout. And I just think that they want to play exactly like they did for the first five games of the postseason, all wins. I don't think they're going to change a thing.
You know, obviously Josh Manson hit that game winner, which was great. Although his acclimation to the Avalanche was a little bit rough in the early goings. Now that we're into the playoffs, has he fully settled in? How's he playing at this point in time? And has that trade been beneficial for the Avalanche?
Well, it's been huge, man. Adding a tough second pairing right shot D was important. He's a younger version of Eric Johnson. He's only 30, and he's tough. He can play really physical, but yet he's really good at moving the puck. I think he was a great addition. I think he's fitting in well because he's such a great teammate. He just really fits in well with this team. And, you know, I think that's a big plus in hockey.
Hey, Mike, you made me feel a little bit better. I'm not worried as much as I was, so I appreciate you coming on.
Before you go, serious prediction. What's how many games do we go?
Well, in the paper, in our preview, I said Avs in six, but right now I'll do Avs in five. I think the Blues might steal a game in San Jose, and we'll be heading back. Let's just say Avs in five. I really think that the Avs are in good shape, and I think the Blues are in trouble.
All right, so you went from six to five. You're definitely making me feel better. Mike, we appreciate you joining us tonight, and we'll look forward to game two tomorrow night.
My pleasure, boys. Thanks.
All right, you can tell he covers hockey because he calls us boys. Right? Such a hockey term. Mike Chambers from the Denver Post joining us on the Johnstone Auto Plaza hotline. All right, it's a thing that has kind of caught fire here in Denver, comparing Russell Wilson's first season in Denver to Peyton Manning's first year here a decade ago. I think it is off base. I think it is nonsense. I'll explain why coming up next.
Hey guys, Tyler Palumbus here to tell you about my new friends at Assignar. Colorado contractors get paid faster and save big time money with Assignar managing their construction operations. From instant crew and equipment scheduling to digital time tracking and forms, contractors using Assignar are averaging $30,000 per year in savings. Collect data from the field to make informed decisions from the office with Assignar platform and mobile app. Go to keepbuilding.com to request your free demonstration of Assignar and see how much your business can save.